How to build a B2B media company. Welcome back to a fresh episode of BreakingB2B.com. I'm your host, Sam Dunning. And if you want to join thousands of legends enjoying past podcast episodes, our daily newsletter, or if you want to apply to work with us, head over to BreakingB2B.com. So today I'm joined by Daniel Murray. Daniel is founder over at the Marketing Millennials. They've got close to 1 million followers on LinkedIn. He's also founder over at Authority. So we'll break down how you can build a B2B media company for your business. First, we'll share the advantages, why you should consider doing it, who should actually be doing it, if it's a good fit for all B2B businesses, how it contributes to pipeline, as well as revenue, cash in the bank. And we're going to be doing a step-by-step of how Daniel's built up his LinkedIn page, the Marketing Millennials, to close to 1 million followers, and how you can do the same for your business. Breaking B2B is sponsored by Revenue Hero. Did you ever fill in a website inquiry form only to wait hours or even days to hear back from a sales rep? Then comes the endless back and forth trying to schedule a time that works for everyone. It's painful, right? Leads slip through the cracks along with a ton of lost revenue. Revenue Hero fixes this painful process for B2B companies just like yours, allowing prospects to book a time on your sales team's calendar instantly from the website. Behind the scenes, marketing can even route qualified leads to the best sales rep for the job. Hundreds of businesses automate their request a demo or book a cool workflow with Revenue Hero, including app queues, Inflection, Ultimate AI, Customer IO, and User Evidence. B2B marketers can see increases in up to 80% of qualified meetings booked. See Revenue Hero in action for yourself today at revenuehero.io. That's revenuehero.io, and grab a free demo. So with that, Daniel, excited to have you on, man. How's it going?
Well, I need your energy in the morning, so I'm excited for this. I'm excited to chat, and thank you for having me on.
No worries, dude. It's always the Pepsi Max I have just before the show. It gives me that little bit of energy that I need to keep it rolling. So, yeah, man, good to chat. First and foremost, we never beat around the bush on this show, so I want to share, in your opinion, there's a lot of buzz about this on LinkedIn, but I want to hear from someone who's actually a practitioner in the space. What does building a media company in the B2B sense actually mean?
Yeah, it is a very convoluted statement that people have of building a media company. I think it's more of thinking like a media company than actually building a media company, because most people can't build it. But thinking like a media company means thinking as your content, as the product, investing in your content, innovating on your content, making your content for everything for your audience, and very little about your company. Thinking about helping people with your content. I think it all comes down to having a mindset that content is important and content drives business, and the people who get it. And it's also, I think which is hard in a lot of B2B companies, is that people look at short-term goals and long-term goals. And a lot of times that they don't want to invest in the long-term thing. I know you know the same thing with SEO.
Sure.
But it's about long term. It's about that thinking long term, that I want to build a name in the industry, be a thought leader in the industry, have expertise in the industry, be known as the thought leader in the space for a certain topic.
Yeah, and I guess that's why almost internal selling, when it comes to marketing, that long game, it's almost like an immediate turnoff for execs, right? So as soon as you say something's going to take, this thing's going to take months, even years to build up and see real results, it's always a tough one, right?
Yeah, and I think the companies that do it are the ones that are long lasting. I think you we'll just go to SEO as the same example. It's just like the companies that have built as strong SEO are the ones that are could survive in the long term. The ones that build strong content that people are actively loving, engaging with, reading, and it's helping people like HubSpot, they're going to be surviving for the long run.
You mentioned something just now, content as a product. I like that. Tell us a bit more about what that actually means.
It means that like there's your product and then there's content as a separate bucket as a product. And when you separate the two buckets and say, okay, I am going to create the best content for my target audience, say your target audience is plumbers, for example. Right. I'm going to make the best plumbing content out there. I'm going to invest in plumbing content. I'm going to make it everything for the audience. I'm not going to be pitching webinars and all this stuff. I'll throw in some of that stuff in the mix, but all my content is just going to be to make sure that the audience loves it, to make sure the audience cares about it, make sure the audience. And you think about distribution. Where am I going to distribute this content? Just like a product, what channels am I going to distribute this content? How much am I going to invest in this product? Yep. What things I need to make this product better? The mindset of that. And then also, I think one of the biggest things is that you can't think of it as a nice to have in your content marketing strategy. I mean, your overall marketing strategy needs to be a center part of that strategy. And it shouldn't be that every time your revenue goals you can't hit, you lean on the content, because that is what you wouldn't do that with your product. You wouldn't do the same thing with your product. So you have to be so focused that this is a long-term play to make sure that this is the best product in the market.
Got it. And to give our audience some context, should any B2B company be doing this, like regardless if you're perhaps a bootstrap startup or maybe even later stage, perhaps you're already turning over 1 million, 2 million, 3 million plus, like, is it a good fit? I guess my question is it a good fit for any business, regardless of the stage you're at, or are there businesses that it is a perfect match for?
I think there's different scales of it. I think everybody should be creating content. I think we're in the age that you have to be creating content as a business, whether it's seen as bottom, middle, funnel, top of funnel, you have to be always creating content. I think when you're smaller stage, it's more about focus, find that one channel that you can be the best in the world and be the one channel that you could dominate in. When you're a later stage, that's where you can start thinking about having a owned audience, having a rented audience, having many rented audiences, having multiple channels of distribution of your content. But I think when you're starting, you could still say start on LinkedIn, and that's your only channel that you're creating content, and have that focus on that. And then when you start seeing results, then move to other channels. I think it's all a bit depends on resources that you have. And I think it's not smart to just rely on demand capture when you're starting. You need to start building that demand creation cycle early.
Yeah.
It's just like, for example, I mean, I love it because you're a website guy, but it's just like SEO, for example, like there's small things you could do when you're starting up. And then when you're in full scale, you can start creating tons of articles, getting tons of backlinks, getting tons of things to make sure that you're ranking higher and higher. But at first, you focus on the small things that can get you the most positive return quickest. And I think same with content, is you find those channels where the low hanging fruits are first, and then you start growing and growing and growing that way. And I think it compounds as you grow as a business.
Got it. Love the analogy. Gonna have to get you back on for this cheeky SEO plug that wasn't pre-rehearsed. So we're gonna break down the process. We're gonna break down how you've built up Marketing Millennials to 900K, nearly a million followers. I know you've got other channels like your podcast as well. That's a successful marketing podcast, your email list as well. Before we do, for anyone that's been tuning in for the last 9-10 minutes or so and thought, this all sounds good and well. Yeah, I quite like the sound of building up a B2B media company. How does it actually contribute to sales pipeline, be that demo request, leads for our company, or perhaps other avenues towards generating revenue, whether that is partnerships, affiliates, sponsorships, whatever? How does it drive bottom line?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's also tough because it depends how great your, like every market, it depends how great your content is. But I think one is focusing on channels where you can, where your audience hangs out on. So like, let's go down the LinkedIn rabbit hole for a minute. What I would do is have a founder or a company page and founder creating content on LinkedIn. As you grow, your page starts getting more expertise. You start getting more expertise. You can also, once you start building trust as a content vehicle, selling becomes people don't care if you sell once in a while. So dropping, hey, we launched this new product, or hey, check out this new things. I like to subtly drop CTAs in the content, like, PS, we're doing this new thing here, check this out. Like, for example, I'll give a tangible example for how we grew Marketing Millennials newsletter. Is we would find posts, we would create posts that we knew would get attention. Yep. We would drop a link in the posts or in the comments that says, hey, why haven't you joined like our newsletter? There's 100,000 marketers just like you, for example. And we would, every single post, get 50 to 60 to 70 new subscribers, and that caught up to an owned audience. And now get more and more expertise from us and more trust. So when we say, hey, we're launching a new event that's paid, people trust us, they love us, they in an own audience, they get so much value from us on a daily basis, they're willing to buy in a second. But it, let's say if you want to go into more of a content stuff, I would say that any stage of the funnel there, you can start thinking about your content, whether it's like bottom of the funnel, you can think of how could I create better content for sales to enable them to sell better? How could I create content that answers the audience's questions that are burning about our product? And then you can move middle funnel of more of educating them about the like the pain in the market, and then top of funnel is more of a attention, just making sure people know who the heck you are. So you move people through the funnel, and that's why I think you need to have a top of funnel vehicle, a middle funnel vehicle, like a newsletter, email, good blog, good whatever your middle funnel channels are, and then bottom of funnel channels are those case studies, those in-depth guides that you produce, those testimonials. So everything basically is content, but you just got to think as your content is how you would, as a buyer, go through the buying cycle as a thing. First, get attention with your content, figure out how to get attention, then figure out how to create more education that's in depth, middle funnel, and then the last is like education on your product, why they should be a part of this, why is this amazing? And then when they're in your product, you still need great content to be able to like keep them in the content. So it's just keep them having a great time retaining them. You can't just stop at the bottom of the funnel. You gotta, it's a full cycle of creating good stuff. So I think of two things as one is having a rented attention-based audience, and second is having a owned audience that you should have first party data that you can go and plug that into Facebook ads, plug that into email sequences, know who your audience is, know who's engaging, know what type of, who is loving your brand. Yeah, I think we could go into deeper than that, but there's so many different ways to see ROI. And but also like SEO, it is going to take longer than putting money in Facebook and seeing a return. It's not one-to-one like that.
Yeah. And I suppose there's, like many things in B2B marketing, it's not a straightforward measurement for what the return is against time or resource spent. Because like you say, there's so many different ways that you can build it out. And if you did start in on LinkedIn, like you say, with your example of the founder page and then the company page, and you're initially building out content to get that top of funnel attention from your prospects, and then eventually looking to do subtle CTAs, whether that is to join your email list or check out your podcast or send them to some kind of owned media. And then that's one chunk of it. And then over time, you're building up the audience on that separate owned platform. But the other thing is, like you say, you can go down the route of sales enablement, where like you look to speed up prospects that may be already in the deal cycle, but you're connected with, let's say, for example, on LinkedIn. And like you say, you answer their common questions. You produce content that addresses their direct pain points, or maybe you produce content that handles common objections you get in sales calls, whether that's video, text, etc. So I suppose there's so many different ways that you can go about it. So direct measurement becomes difficult, but I suppose you can do things like how many people kind of joined your own channels off the back of it. Or I suppose if you are doing kind of direct CTAs and posts every now and then to your own site and using that kind of data.
I think also, I mean, Chris Walker said best with just adding simple, like, where did you hear about us on a form? We'll start telling you that, oh, hey, these people heard about us on a podcast. This person heard about us on LinkedIn. This person heard about us on these things. A lot of people think that, oh, I got it from paid branded search. Like they heard about us from paid branded search. And I was like, I always say, like, how do they hear about your brand? Like they just typed in your brand out of nowhere. So that's how they knew about it, from branded search. And most B2B companies spend a lot of money on branded search. I know that because I've been in B2B companies that spent a lot on branded search, and that was the number one performing channel, but they didn't consider there's millions of other things they were doing to get them to branded search. So it's funny.
True. A lot of companies have to spend cash on Google paid search on their own brand because their competitors are bidding against them.
Yeah. I think if you're doing a good job with content, you're creating so much expertise that even if your competitors are betting against you, people are there for you. They're not there for The problem is that, like, it's the people who haven't built any expertise, education, don't know who they may be seeing a Facebook ad, typed it in, goes search, and they're like, oh, here's other options. Let me do more research. You want to get people to the point where they're loving you so much that like they skip that fighting against that. But obviously, like, there's a demand capture bucket that you have to do to get the existing demand in the market, and then you have to educate. I think a lot of people when they're starting are trying to get those early adopters, which is great, but you have to start building a small flywheel. And the best way to do this is do it small and measure blended CAC. And if your blended CAC is not doing well, then you can start investing differently. But if your channels are performing well and have good blended CAC, you could still invest as much as you want. It's when your blended CAC isn't good, you kind of screwed.
Yeah. Like you say, it's a good point. Adding "how'd you hear about us" on demo forms or inquiry forms or calendar booking is smart. And then I even tell teams these days, because so many folks, especially on my "how'd you hear about us," they actually forgot. So like, I've had people that have come in and they've said like LinkedIn, and then I ask them on the sales call and they're like, "Oh, actually, first I heard your podcast, then I followed you on LinkedIn, then I checked out your email list, and then I did something else." So they've took like 5 different actions. So I'll always say, like, please ask your sales team to, even if they've put one channel on the inquiry form, ask your sales folks to ask, because then you get a bit more intel on the journey. Might not always be perfect, but if you get them to ask something like, "What was your full journey of stumbling across us today?" or "How did you stumble upon us today?" sometimes gives you an extra few golden nuggets, because I know some people are just in a rush to fill out your form and book that time or book that calendar slot.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think so many people spend so many time relying on their marketing attribution and or that first party data question that they don't get to see the full picture, and then they lose those channels that we're talking about before that are pumping good results. Like, for example, "Oh, I saw you on a Facebook ad," but they could have been like, "Yeah, I've heard about you from this person on LinkedIn or this and this, but then I saw your Facebook ad and now I'm ready to do something." So it's like the last touch could have been that, but it doesn't mean that you weren't introduced into your world through another channel that happened. So that was a great point you just made.
So let's dig into some actionables. We've teed it up quite nicely. And feel free to use the Marketing Millennials, because I'm sure plenty of folks would be curious to know how you've built up to nearly 1 million followers on the LinkedIn page, as well as your own audience on LinkedIn, plus your email list, plus your podcast. Feel free to use any examples as you see fit. So when it comes to building up a B2B media company, what is like step one, Daniel? What's the first thing that a business should be thinking about or planning?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, like, what do you want to be known for? What is your expertise, and who is the audience you're trying to serve with this expertise? I think that's the number one thing, is figuring out what you're trying to do with this and who the audience is, because it helps you create. And then also, who do you want to be? What's your brand? Who do you want to be? Do you want to be fun? Do you want to be serious? Do you want to be known as a like professor type thought leader? Do you want to be a comedic type thought leader? Who are you before you get started as a brand? And then I would say, go spend time finding out where your audience hangs out on. And it could be LinkedIn, it could be Reddit, it could be whatever. Figure out that channel first, and then focus on one. Learn that one channel that most your audiences hang out. Learn it backwards. Reverse engineer what the best people are doing. Find out what they're doing, how they're doing. Also, with all the research you have, you should have a bunch of questions that your audience have been asking that you can create as easy content to start. So once you're in the audience and hear what they're saying, hear what they're talking about, hear what questions that come up over and over again, you can start finding your spot. But first you have to look at the market and see, how am I going to be different in this market? How am I going to stand out? How am I going to be different? Also, the number one thing in B2B is expertise. I think people trust people who are experts. I think that's the problem with a lot of B2B content now. It's just written by people who are great marketers, just not experts in that space. So people inherently don't trust that content that they put out, and they're not going to read content that they don't trust. So there needs to be some sort of expertise. That's why I think we're in the age of having more creators, or bringing a creator in, or bringing a subject matter expert into your team. That's why Drift did so well. That's why Gong did so well, because Dave was an expert in marketing. Devin Reed was an expert in sales. They can create content that is so trustworthy that, and so, and they have the expertise behind the content that it's just so good to for the audience. So when you start doing that and then you start focusing on one channel, just nail that one channel, be the double down on that channel, make sure it's the best. Make sure that the my simple formula I tell people is A plus consistency plus B plus content. So you just have to create content that's above average than the rest of the people and just be way more consistent than everybody and outlast them. That's how the marketing millennials have lasted for so long, is because we're just super consistent. And I would like to say most of the content we put out is above average. Or an average has very, I think the algorithm is the audience. So if the audience likes the content, then you're doing, like, LinkedIn is going to show more content that people want to see. Even if people think it's fluffy or cringe or whatever they think, LinkedIn is showing that content because people are engaging with that content. They want to keep people on the platform. They're not going to show people content that, oh, these people hate this content. Let me just keep showing people content that people hate. LinkedIn wants people on their platform. So figure out what works on the platform and keep doing what works and that format where it works. Speak the language of the platform and your audience at the same time.
Got it. We got to give a huge shout out to Factors.ai. In B2B, there's a few harsh truths. At best, only 4% of your website visitors convert into sales calls, and less than 1% of the outbound account list ends up making a purchase. By the time people request a demo or call, they're already late in their stages of evaluation. Smart B2B companies don't wait for people to magically buy. Instead, they expand their sales pipeline by tapping into intent signals. Factors.ai identifies prospects showing buying intent on your website, LinkedIn, and G2. Prospect into high intent accounts at the moment they're buying. Make it easy for your team to generate revenue and get more from every dollar spent. The best part, you can attribute and track everything seamlessly through the Factors.ai platform. Don't miss out, grab a free trial today and start maximizing your revenue over at Factors.ai. A lot to unpack. How long ago did you start the marketing millennials on LinkedIn?
So I actually started as my I was a marketing ops person, and I wanted to test LinkedIn as just a channel. So I tested my own profile and started posting marketing stuff just on the side, just to prove that LinkedIn is a good channel. And then I started seeing success. Like, I had 1,000 followers that were all friends, but I was getting like 3,000 impressions on a post, and I was like, oh, this is crazy. And at that time, that was a lot to me. I was like, oh, shoot, I'm posting one thing and I'm getting 3,000 impressions and I only have 1,000 followers. There's some organic reach here. So I started creating more content, and then I was like running out of ideas of content. So I decided, oh, I need a new vehicle of creating content. One of the things that I think will be great is a podcast, because I can pick brains of the experts in marketing and I can have more and more content in the world. So I started a podcast, The Marketing Millennials, and then that turned into, oh, I don't want to only distribute Marketing Millennials content on my personal page to grow it. I'm going to start a company page to grow, to put out all the cool content that people are seeing. So I started a company page. I had a goal. I was like, oh, I'm going to get 10,000 followers in a year. This is going to be good. And then it grew to 50,000 followers. And the reason why I did is I started doing this strategy where I wanted to get more great podcast guests. So I would take a screenshot from like the top people on Twitter who weren't big on LinkedIn, and I would post it in the Marketing Millennials, and it would go pretty viral. And then they would reach out and be like, thanks for sharing my stuff. I would always hype them up and say, follow them and go follow their page. And they would get thousands of connections. And they would come to me and say, thank you so much. And I'd be like, oh, no problem. Like, would you mind being a guest on the Marketing Millennials? And they,
okay.
They 90% of the time they would be do that. So as I'm growing this page with doing like resharing great content that I think from marketers and being the hype person for marketers, my goal was to be just the hype person in the marketing industry, just hyping up cool marketing content that was out there. That was the first goal of the Marketing Millennials, just being the hype person. That grew the page to very quickly. And then that brought people to the podcast and grew the podcast. And then once I got up to like 250,000 followers, 300,000 followers, I started a newsletter to start capturing those people, which in hindsight, I probably should have started a newsletter way earlier, because that's email is probably one of the best distribution channels out there to reach an audience, build intimacy with the audience, just like a podcast. Those two are like my two favorite channels to build in-depth stuff with the audience. I do love the rented channels like LinkedIn and Instagram, but those are the two intimate channels to build a good audience.
Legend. Did you kind of foresee that there was a space in marketing for a page like this? Because I've, in your style, like a lot of what I see from the Marketing Millennials is quite funny, quite humorous, like the gifs, the memes, and all that kind of stuff. Like there's just funny shit, right? As well as some sensible stuff, like some cool quotes and, like you say, hyping up marketers like you did when you were early stage. The only page that I can kind of remember that's kind of similar was one by Daniel Disney called The Daily Sales, where he used to post similar kind of stuff, but that was focused on sales reps. Did you see that there was like a gap in the market for this kind of stuff on marketing, or was it more you started doing it, it worked, and then you grew it?
I think so. Two things. I think the vibe always of the podcast was supposed to be like fun, no BS, like cool, funny, like just banter. And then I realized that the top pages on Instagram and all these stuff are these quote mean pages that people love and are engaging with and following. And I've noticed in the marketing space, nobody was doing that. So I also realized that LinkedIn was full of, I was a director of marketing, and the people who were thought leaders at the time when I started were CMOs, and I didn't want to be the one coming out and sharing like that I know everything about marketing. So I wanted to end up being the, what I like to call the break in the LinkedIn feed, the one where I can entertain, having a little space to like have a laugh during work. I wanted to feel like be different, and not only the people having content that people can learn from, but being a break. And I thought of it as like, if I can think of my LinkedIn page as a way to get attention to drive people to other channels that I want them to be, i.e. like the podcast or the newsletter, yep. That's where they can get more deeper expertise, and I can really show my expertise. On LinkedIn, I want to just be the place where people can have a laugh or get a quick tip or get something that made their day. And I think adding value just means adding something to someone's day. And some people think it's deep expertise, whatever, but I think for me, the goal of LinkedIn is attention. It's not intention. The intention channels are newsletter, podcast, virtual events, live events. Those are the things where you can get deep expertise. I want people to come off the channel. On LinkedIn, I want them to have fun. I want them to love, like, see relevant content, have a community, show that people feel the same way as they do, laugh with other marketers. I think there's so much people like out there that are producing great in-depth content that I didn't need to be another one doing that on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The more you're talking, the more you're making me think, like, all these super long form posts that I'm putting on LinkedIn about SEO, websites, B2B marketing, I'm thinking maybe I should do some more lighter stuff and kind of make people laugh.
I think it's a good mixture. I think a mixture is great. I think having some attention-based post. I always tell people who are growing the audience, have like one or two or three attention-based type posts where you know the audience will like this, you know this, and then have in-depth posts for those in-depth SEO people who want to learn in-depth SEO stuff. But most people you're going to start attracting are probably like trying to learn what SEO is. And when you're saying that stuff, it's not going to resonate with them that much. But if you can break it down in a simple, quick format that grabs their attention really fast, that they can consume, and just like an ad or a blog or something, like the headline grabs someone in. And then if they want to read your whole post, you can have a long in-depth post too. So you can have a mixture of having a catchy headline that is a good post, and then the long, a relevant one-liner that people, or two-liners or meme that people are, that catches their attention first, and then go in depth with what they're saying, with stuff you want to say. So I think you can have a mixture of both, but I think it all depends on your goal of that channel. I think some people's goal, if I was a company, I would not do all that I'm doing with the market millennials for them, because I think you have to show expertise on that channel too as a company. I think I just got the luxury that I wasn't a company and I got to do whatever I wanted on that. But now, like, market millennials is producing good revenue as well off of media. So I think it just shows that, like, when I ever meet people or they DM me, they say, oh, I love your podcast, I love the newsletter, I love your LinkedIn is my favorite, I follow you on all socials. It's just, there's so many different places where people want different things. And some people don't want in-depth content. They just don't. They want something quick. And then when the time comes, just like marketing, when the time comes and they want more in-depth content, you have that ready in your arsenal to share with them. So that's why I think you need both attention and intention on your pages, or ways to have both.
That makes sense. So from what you've just shared there, step one, think about what you want to be known for. Just before we progress, how close, like if we're looking at, let's say we are a B2B company, how closely linked to our actual offer or service do you think it should be? Like, for example, I don't know, maybe I can give you an example. Like, I don't know, maybe we're a SaaS company doing accounting.
I think your content should be, if you're doing accounting software, I wouldn't say it's linked to your accounting software. I think it would be linked to accountants is the content. Like, be the best content for accountants. If accountants are loving your content and seeing that you're an expert, they're going to come to your product and be like, oh, this person gets accounting. They must know what they're doing with their product. They understand accountants like better than anybody in the business. Like, people are saying, follow these people for accounting advice. Like, if they know accounting advice, they probably have the best accounting software out there. They're showing credibility by posting all this account. So I would figure out what I want to be the best. You can link it to your product in the way of, let's say your product is like a specific thing of like, let's say it does a couple of things. You could say like niche your content to accountants, be like, here are some budgeting tips, here are some ways to do better payroll, here's some ways to do X, Y, and Z, here's some ways to do like, here's how I think about doing, I'm not an accountant, so like whatever they are doing in your product that is just like day-to-day things, like you can give it tips and advice on how to do it better. That's not doing with your product. You could say like, this is how I would budget. First, I would get with all of my team. And second, I would do this and this. And then you can show funny things too, like me in a budgeting meeting with these people. And then you could show like a one line tip of like the key to budgeting is X, Y, and Z. And you can do like so many different things off that like one little like theme of your product, but it's all like, you don't have to talk about your product. And then like they'll start getting it. They're like, oh, I want to learn more about this type of stuff. Click on your link. And then they start doing that. Or like you get them deeper in the funnel. Like, oh, we have this virtual event that we put on every Friday. You should attend it. We'd go even deeper on this stuff. And if you want to go deeper with us, this is what we do. And then, or you could be like, hey, we have a free trial. If you just want to check out, or we have this free tool that helps you budgeting better, come on our website to come look at this free budgeting tool. So you can have these little things that are like driving people to actions on your website and collecting good data on people. But you have to create content for accountants. Otherwise, accountants are not going to follow. If you're creating SaaS content, like if you're SaaS software that's accountant, no accountants are going to follow what SaaS people care about. They just won't. So
95% of SaaS companies wondering why their posts get one like.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is most of them like think of like, this is just, let me just put out a piece of content. Like, this is just a checkbox in their like calendar. Mm. It's like, let me just share my web. Oh, we're doing a webinar. Where should we share this webinar? Okay, one place is LinkedIn, one place. Okay, let's just put it on LinkedIn. Check. That's usually what most companies, and I've seen the back end, it's just like, oh, check. Like we posted that webinar, or check. We made a post on LinkedIn today. There's no intention behind the post. It's just like, we just need to fill up our content calendar instead of like thinking the mindset I said at the beginning, thinking your content as a product, like, would I share this with a group of accountants? Mm. Would they care about this post? Like if I had a group chat of accountants and I shared this, would they think it's educational, funny, entertaining, inspirational, like insightful, like would they care? And if the answer is no, you probably shouldn't be sharing that content online.
I think we've just like inspired some accountant stroke marketer within an accountant SaaS organization to create a page like accounting banter or financial banter, because something like that could take off, right? I can't imagine there's many pages like in that niche that are showing memes of like accountants buried in spreadsheets saying, do you feel like this?
Yeah, and I also think it doesn't even have to be that. It could be like, it could just be like top advice for accountants, like from like different accountants. Like having a podcast is one of the best ways to get quotes from a bunch of different people. So like having a podcast, you can get the best accountants in the world on your podcast, and then you have all these tips from accountants that you're just sharing, videos, one-line clips, quotes, their step-by-step, whatever. You can get all this like knowledge of information, and then like the podcast doesn't have to even rank. You just use it as a tool to create content. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. I think if you want to have a lasting company, you have to show that you have expertise. It's not just you're creating a product for money like that. You have to show that you actually understand what you're building.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What you said earlier was interesting. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there's so many, like LinkedIn for my feed anyway, is naturally, us being in B2B, is flooded by marketers in tech. I'm sure not everyone's is the same as mine, but these days it's becoming hard for me to decipher who actually is an expert in their area of industry, or who is actually just a really good marketer and just so good at hyping up and putting light tips on LinkedIn and that kind of stuff. Who is just super good at marketing? Like, well, prime example is someone selling a course on LinkedIn. Like, it sounds meta, but I suppose for folks that are new to the platform, it almost becomes difficult for them to decipher, like, is this person actually an expert in this niche, or are they just super good at marketing themselves?
Yeah, and I do think some of them are really good at marketing themselves, and I do think some of them are very good experts and yep. they're on the right channel doing the stuff. But I think like that's why I think you need multiple places to show expertise. And you also I also think like you need someone in the organization who's done it before to share the content. Or to be the face of the content. Because I don't think you can just start if you're not an accountant and you've never been an accountant before. It'll be so hard to share accounting things that accountants were like, because you haven't been through it before. You haven't, like, the best content comes from the things you've been through that you're just sharing. Like when I share marketing stuff, like memes and quotes and stuff, all of them are just like what I would felt or what I feel or what I know my friends have felt or I know my peers are feeling. And that's what I'm sharing because I've done it before. It's not, but for other people, if you haven't done that, it's hard. People who actually do it could sniff you out very quickly.
I suppose that's it as well, especially if you're like, eventually your offer is B2B high ticket, then folks aren't just going to see a few posts on LinkedIn or things like that. They're going to, like you say, do deeper research, check out maybe your podcast, your YouTube channel, email list, your website. And like you say, eventually you will be sniffed out.
Justin Welch is the perfect example. Like he deeply understands LinkedIn. He deeply understands how to make build an audience. He built an audience of over 600K followers on his profile. He has a course. If you take his course, it's a great course. He has content on his website that shares his expertise. He has a newsletter that is showing his expertise all the time. I mean, obviously he's creating for solopreneurs, but one of the ways for solopreneurs to grow is have a good LinkedIn. Yep. The way he does it is like he's showing his expertise by creating good content. Also, he has credibility he's built an audience. Like look, I've built 500K followers. I know how to do this. So there's that part too. I think there's that psychology part is like, you need credibility. Like you wouldn't trust an Instagram expert who has 300 followers. Like you want an Instagram expert who has built a page 100,000 to a million followers to help you on Instagram. Like you wouldn't want someone who's like that for an expert. So there's that credibility side of it too. Obviously you wanted them someone who's done it in a way that it is not hacky, meaning like buying followers or other ways. But if they did it through like the algorithm, sharing good content, people trust them, they're actually getting comments and good likes and good shares, then you're on to someone who knows how to use the platform pretty well. For you example, like you really know website and SEO, you've done it for your whole career. You're sharing advice. Whenever you share advice, it's good advice. People understand your advice. It's like when you came on my podcast, I asked you questions. You gave me things that an SEO person would know and you distilled it so simply that it was so easy for an SEO person to do it. If you weren't an SEO person, you couldn't do that. I don't know anybody you couldn't distill it so easily that I can understand as a non-SEO person or a non-website person.
I appreciate it, man.
There's that. Yeah.
Cool. So the one other thing that I want to break down in this section before we wrap things up. So research, it just sounds so critical. Like with your example for the marketing millennials, like I was saying before, I think there was some good foresight because you pretty much, whether it was knowingly or not, you noticed that there was a decent gap and you attacked it well. And you also, you know the industry inside out, like you say, you need someone on either yourself or someone who's part of the company that is a hands-on expert in the subject. And then, like you say, start on one channel where your focus audience is actually hanging out, be it LinkedIn, be it Insta, be it somewhere else. But the one thing I wanted to question was, you mentioned you should try and be different How important is that in this strategy, like being different to what already exists?
The thing is that, like, that word is very broad. I think, like, different could mean so many things, different things. It could be the format of the content you share, the stories you tell, your personality, and you sharing your personality is being different than the rest. What I mean by not being the same is, like, sharing exactly ChatGPT AI content that everybody else is sharing, or sharing exactly the same format as everybody else in the same exact words, like feeling the sea of sameness. Like, that's what I mean. I think you could still talk about the same things, but you could do it in your unique way with sharing your unique perspective, your unique story, your unique format, your unique, there's so many different ways to be different. I think you have to figure out the number one goal in marketing, and I know, is to get attention. Like, is the number one goal in marketing, because you have to stop someone in their tracks, and you can't, it's hard to stop yourself in the tracks if you look like everybody else in the world. So if your content looks like everybody else, it's hard to, that's why when I was noticing that, like, tweets were stopping people in their tracks. Like, nobody was doing tweets. Now everybody's doing that format. But when I was doing it, nobody was posting tweets on LinkedIn. It was, like, unseen. Like, people were like, now a lot of people are doing that format, but nobody was doing it. And I noticed that this big tweet was stopping people in their tracks. Like, people were, like, stopping because it took up more of the feed.
Right.
It was different. It was, and I wanted to do blackout tweets because the feed was white. So I was like, oh, this is going to be different than the feed. So I was trying to think of ways to be stand out in the feed that's different, that from all these, like, long text posts that are, I wanted to be this, like, take up the feed and make sure that people saw my content and stay top of mind. I think one of the number one goals in marketing is to be consistently in people's minds. So who you are, no matter if they read your content or not, if your name is showing up or your company is showing up daily in their feed, subconsciously they're seeing you a lot and building a rapport with you, whether they're reading your content or not. So, and they know who you are. So I think the two goals is to grab attention and stay top of mind with that attention over a long period of time.
I think a lot of folks get stuck on that part, that piece of the puzzle. They think that, oh, there's so many people posting about, let's say, the accounting example, that I've got so many connections posting financial advice. And they'll be like, oh, I'm just going to be just like them. But like you said, there's so many ways you can put your own spin on it, whether that is you're putting your point of view on something in the industry, doing something funny, whether it's a meme, putting your own area of expertise on it, sharing a story. Like, there's so many ways that you can spin it up. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, do you? Just change an element of it. Like you said, your way was
also tweets. Also, if you think about it, there's a reason why you're seeing that content, is because, and a lot of that content is because LinkedIn is feeding you content that you want to see.
Great or point.
That is relevant to you. There's so many people who aren't posting on LinkedIn, who are just 90% of the internet are just sitting there looking. They're not even engaging. They're just looking at your content. Like, they're scrolling on TikTok. They're not even engaging on TikTok. They're scrolling on LinkedIn. They're not even engaging. And then there's that 5% of people who are engaging on posts, commenting. I mean, some of them are engaging, meaning liking, but they were not commenting. And there's that 5% who are commenting on posts, and that's their way of staying in the community. And then there's that other smaller percentage of people who are posting, and you're just, they're just feeding you stuff that you're seeing. So you think there's a lot of content out there for your niche, but really there's so many people that are not served because those people are just owning the space now. There's so much room for you to be another voice in that space. I'm telling you, there's so many marketers out there, or there's so many plumbers out there. There's so many, and just because that person has 30,000 of them, then maybe 5,000 are looking at, there's so many people who are like LinkedIn wants to feed your content to more of those people that are not getting good content. So if you can create, like I said, above the average of the industry, like you see the average, like you see a lot of the average on your feed, you can create a little bit better than them. Like even the average are beating out the people who aren't posting. So if you can be above that, you could be in the 1% of the people who are posting out there. So
love it. Love it. Yeah. A plus consistency, B plus content. That's what you said earlier. That's a great way of putting it. So just before we wrap things up, you've given some great advice in terms of the fundamentals, what you should do initially in terms of the research, actually putting it into play practically, and then building it out. What any tips when it comes to actually scaling this thing out? So let's say we've put together the foundations, maybe we've been running it for a few months or so. Are there any considerations that we should think as we actually want to build this? Perhaps we focused on one platform and we're starting to build it out.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think one is you have to do unscalable things at first. And what I mean by that is unscalable things is you have to be deeply engaging in the community. When I started, I would comment, I would have say, I'm going to comment on 40 posts a day of marketers. I'm going to be in the comments. I'm going to respond to people. I'm going to respond to every comment. So you have to do that unscalable things to start scaling at first. So do that, post every single day, even if your post gets one or two likes, because it's just testing. But one, like, engage with people. Also, what I would do is have the top 20 influencers in your industry and engage in their posts, because if people are loving their content, they will inherently start, some of them are going to gravitate to your content if you're going to post it, if you're engaging with those people. And also, like, send 10 to 15 connection requests to people who are active on the platform at the beginning, to start saying, like, hey, I saw, like, where, don't go cheesy with them, but say, like, hey, like, we're both, when I used to say, like, hey, I forgot what I said, but I was like, say, like, hey, I see, like, we both love marketing content. We either create or post content on the regular. Like, I just want to keep you in my feed so I can see any future things you post. Like, that's simple. Like, I didn't want anything from them. I just wanted to show that I care about, like, we're marketers. So I want to be in the community with you. And the more and more people you start building up those small blocks, then they're going to come to your content. And then when people start coming to your content and liking your post, then you start building this, like, slow engine of they're going to like. And then when more people like your post, then your post gets seen to more people. And then when more people like your post, then it gets seen to more people. And then it starts getting this snowball effect of, like, more and more people start liking your post, and then it gets seen to more people. So, like, LinkedIn is one of the best ways, because it does have high organic reach comparative to other channels. Actually, a lot of channels now have high organic reach. You need to know where to go. Like, for example, Instagram, you post a static image, is not going to do anything. But if you post an IG reel, you can go viral. TikTok, you can go viral. YouTube Shorts, you can go viral. Facebook pages, now you can go viral. So there's so many different avenues you can, like, find your spot and dominate on it. I just think you need to figure out, do the things at first of community building, unscalable things at first, and then also the hard thing, which is put out content consistently. Just stick to, like, what I used to do is put a thing on my calendar, 7 a.m. every morning, post. Like, I had to get a post out. Like, that was, like, I had to do that every single morning. And then it built, just compounded. And then over 6 months to 8 months to a year, it started growing and growing and growing. Just like we said before, just like SEO, just like these things take time, because you have to, because trust takes time. And that's the hard part, is, like, trust takes time. And if you want to be if your goal is to be, get great revenue today versus revenue in 10 years, like, a lot of marketers think in short-term horizons. The best marketers think in long-term horizons. They think, I want to be still standing 10 years from now. Like, I know that if I do this bad marketing today, it's going to create negative signal in the market that's going to burn potential buyers that would come to me in the future. So they know that. And that's why the companies that are longstanding are doing these things that we're talking about.
Such a great point. And it just goes back to that B2B buying cycle, right? I mean, people have got to see you on LinkedIn, for example, so many times before they actually, one, trust you enough, secondly, kind of believe that you can help, and then thirdly, have got to be in a place where they actually need your offer, that it's actually relevant in the end stage. So if we're talking about kind of content that's eventually going to convert someone, whether that is lighter touch, like signing up to your newsletter or consuming your podcast, let alone buying your product eventually, if you are doing it as a solution, not kind of building up a media brand directly, then just think about your own buying experiences. When you've purchased a B2B product that's perhaps hundreds of bucks a month or thousands of bucks a month, like how long did it take you to trust a brand enough to eventually reach out and do business directly with them, and think about how much content you might have consumed or how many times you might have seen them in the feed before you kind of they were the one of choice. So I think a lot of people just skip that part and kind of want the quick results, but don't necessarily want to put in the work and take those steps that you've shared. So really appreciate you running it through, Daniel.
Of course. Thank you for having me on. And I really appreciate what you're doing here with the show and you putting out great content. So thank you for that.
Cheers, dude. Thanks very much. So for anyone tuning in that wants to learn more about yourself, the Marketing Millennials Authority, please do share more and how they can connect with you on those businesses.
If you want lighter touch, funny meme content, you can follow the Marketing Millennials on LinkedIn. If you want in-depth, more marketing in-depth content, we have a newsletter, the Marketing Millennials. You can go to markmillennials.com or the podcast on any podcast network. And Authority is just Authority B2B. If you're a marketer with a marketing audience that want to scale on LinkedIn, we help people do that. So those are the places you can find me. But I think follow the marketers you want to follow. And I think one of them is great marketer Sam. So keep following him and you'll learn a lot about marketing.
Very kind, man. Very kind. Thanks once again, Daniel. We'll put links to all of those channels below in the show notes and the description. We've got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Revenue Hero, and Factors.ai for sponsoring this show. And if you want to join thousands of legends checking out past podcast episodes, the daily newsletter, or to apply to work with our team, head over to breakingb2b.com. Thank you to Daniel, and thank you to you, the audience, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one for more No BS B2B marketing tips. See you soon.